Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, Degrassi world.
Hello.
We're back again. As we always promise, we will be, and most of the time, we don't let you down. This is another Degrads podcast, the Degrassi Rewatch podcast, with your hosts, Shane Warren Kipple, Gavin Spinner-Mason,
and Mike Lobel, a.k.a. Jay Hogart.
Love seeing you, buddy.
Thanks, man. Good to see you, too. We're back in the saddle, and we're doing a follow-up right quick. This episode, it's a peek into the world, the inner world of JT York, who I would say is one of the most beloved characters on Degrassi.
And one of the most requested guests on Degrads by far.
And also a guinea pig is in the episode. It's so adorable.
Isabella, who might not be with us anymore, I have a feeling.
Don't say that, Shane.
All right. Fair enough. But we are very happy to say that Ryan Cooley did. He heeded the call.
He did. He replied. And
yes,
Ryan has actually been the guest that I most want on this podcast.
You're going to alienate all our other guests.
No. It's been a long time since we've spoken. It's been a long time since Ryan has been sort of like in the constellation of Degrassi, and we all felt his loss, after he moved on. And so there's no one I wanted to talk to more.
Oh, he's going to have such an ego when we finally allow him to speak on this thing. Should we bring the man in?
Let's do it. Yes. Ryan Cooley started acting professionally before Degrassi. Actually, he was playing the lead role of Pleskett on I Was a Sixth Grade Alien before obviously becoming everyone's favorite goofball JT York on Degrassi, The Next Generation. Since then, Ryan has taken a pretty fascinating path. When I last bumped into him, he'd left acting and he'd entered the burgeoning tech world where he's built an impressive career. Today, we have a very rare pleasure of catching up on that journey and where life has taken him since. Ryan, welcome to Degrads.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. What an intro. I can't fit my head through the doorway with that intro. Thank you.
That's what I'm saying. Mike, you have to stop doing that.
We like to gas up our guests here.
Should I have charged for this interview? I feel like...
Probably. You see, and this is what I'm saying, Mike. Look what you've done. All right.
Well, look, I will say right off the get-go that it's a pleasure to be back into the Degrassi universe. And I can't think of a better way to do it or a better place to do it than right here with you guys, which was a big part of the reason why I was like, yeah, let's do this thing. 25 some odd years on, let's make it happen. So it's great to see you both.
Thank you. Lovely to see you. And yeah, what were your sort of thoughts when we slid into your DMs, and was that shocking?
Yeah, it was. it's been a little minute since, you know, I've been asked to come back into this world and talk about my experience. I mean, people do reach out every once in a while, and by and large, I've just been kind of doing my own thing. And honestly, a big part of it is to actually speak to former cast members. Like that's to me, that was the no-brainer part of all this. It's just like Mike and Shane, talk to these guys and seeing what you guys have done on the show so far. And part of it was like watching, you know, Miriam and Shane, I watched, you know, recently do a podcast with you guys. And I was just like, you know what? It's time for me to step back into this and to talk about my experience. And hopefully people want to hear it.
Most of the cast have left the industry, the ones who've been on Degrads, but everyone has their own relationship with how they felt about being child actors, how their relationship with being on Degrassi. Some want to keep it at arm's length or pretend it never happened in some cases. And some have reached gotten to this point in their lives where you can just kind of celebrate it, that even though you're not, that's not what you do anymore, you had this really unique childhood and bond with these other people, and you can talk about it, just have a fun conversation and leave it there.
I totally agree. And I think that, you know, when I left the show, I was going off to do, you know, college and starting a whole new kind of chapter of my life, and was growing this business, which, you know, we can talk more about. But part of me was just like, okay, I'm going to focus on building this business with my colleagues and my best friends. And that was really the primary focus over the past, you know, 10, 15 or so years. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, that's what I wanted to be talking about and focusing on. But now,
naturally, yeah.
You know, it's like, well, 25 years is, you know, a long time. Yeah. But I don't know. It's kind of weird to say, but like, I don't know if other guests have said this, but like, I will often like dream about the show, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm back on the set. And yeah. so yeah. like that means that it's an extremely important part of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I'm into that. I'm going to celebrate that. And I guess the maturity of being a little older now, means that, I don't have to feel kind of like weird or embarrassed to talk about it anymore. It's actually mm-hmm. something that I'm like super proud of, and being able to actually watch the episode kind of brought back a whole bunch of memories of being on the show. And it was an unbelievable part of my life. Like it really was mm-hmm. that the 6 or 7 years I was doing it were just amazing, man.
You light up the screen, man. Like you your joy and your mischief is infectious. You know, this episode particularly, where we get to see JT as more of a two-dimensional character, we actually start to see deeper into him and his abilities, and you know, like all those interactions privately with Hatzilakos and the guinea pig, as you were yeah. sort of discovering mm-hmm. As JT was discovering that he could care for this creature, was really beautiful to see.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's the classic story of, you know, the kid in school that brings on the identity of being kind of the class clown or the funny guy. We all went through high school. You know, you have to kind of maintain that facade of that personality. Right. And I think that the writers were certainly exploring that with my character, because my character from literally minute one of episode one was going to be the funny guy, the charming, you know, the charming young kid, you know, with the fedora, you know, they had me wear on episode one, which was kind of like the handoff between mm-hmm. me and
Joey
Jeremiah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that it was, you know, it was about that. It was about saying like, you know, the class clown can have another side, and the pressure from your friends to continue that persona and be the mm-hmm. tough guy or the funny guy or whatever it is, versus, you know, actually finding out how you feel about, you know, in this case, you know, taking care of a little guinea pig, yeah. Or interacting with your teachers in a mature way or what have you. So, I mean, I found it to be a pretty endearing little episode. And
mm-hmm. yeah. Me too.
I remember when we would go to these read-throughs we would do the read-throughs before the actual episodes came out. We would give the cast an opportunity to see the episodes. I don't know what it was like a month or two before we actually filmed mm-hmm. them. But yeah. Yeah. all the cast members were always kind of curious to see like, okay, is this going to be my mm-hmm. dramatic episode? Is this going to be my episode where I get to kind of like really dig into a storyline?
Flip through to the last page, see who got the freeze. All
who
that.
Got yeah, the freeze,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can remember, you know, feeling a little bit like that, right? It's just yeah. like, oh, this is going to be, you know, my opportunity to do that, because they're going to yeah. give me something more than just, you know, the fart jokes or the like, yeah. you know, screwing around with Toby or Liberty or whatever it was. So I can remember being like, I got to nail this one, you know?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it means that if I do, then they'll give me another one at some point. So
totally. This was your Matthew McConaughey breaking out of the rom-com archetype there.
Degrassi was a big get. I can remember, you know, when it all came out, and you know, my agent and you know, was talking about what Degrassi was and what this meant and what big a deal that was. And so I remember approaching the audition you know, with that kind of knowledge and that background and that nervousness, you know, I can remember being there, you know, with, you know, a bunch of like what was kind of like random kids. It was like actors that I knew from having already been in the industry to people who were like kind of brand new that they were literally pulling, I don't know, out of schools or something off the street. So
yes,
it was a pretty cool process. And actually one thing that I'm not sure that has been really talked about before, but my character did not exist. There was no J.T. York.
Oh, what?
And I auditioned for Toby. And so I went to, there were like three or four callbacks that you had to go through, you know, as they kind of narrowed it down to who they wanted to, you know, wanted to pick. And so started out Toby, did a couple of scenes, whatever, you know, sat in the boardroom at the Degrassi lot with, you know, Linda Schuyler and a couple of the other writers in the boardroom watching you. Went through that process and got all the way to the end. When they were doing the screen tests, this was when they were launching the whole product with the famous Bruce McDonald, and he was sort of like, you know, the person that they were putting Degrassi, you know, into his hands to launch this new generation in these first few episodes. So he was, of course, there, and I was doing this the sides and doing the audition as Toby, and it just wasn't quite gelling. And I could, and Bruce, I remember, kind of stopped the audition and was kind of like, okay, we're just going to kind of put the sides down for a second and the script down. Just talk to me. Like, let's just have a chat. And my kind of, you know, I was whatever, how old I was there, 10 or 11 or 12 years old, just talk to me. And he was asking me what I did and what I liked and what kind of TV shows I watched and what do I do for fun. And like, I was just kind of playing with them. Now I remember, you know, having been an experienced actor, you need to kind of be on in the room. So I'm cracking jokes and I'm making the people laugh and making them feel comfortable and just sort of showing that side of my personality, because that's what I thought that you needed to do in the audition at that time. And I guess that Bruce saw something, in me and the producers, thankfully. And about 2 weeks later, I got a call and from my agent, it said, you booked Degrassi. Congratulations. I said, oh, that's fantastic. I said, so, you know, it'll be this Toby character. And, my agent goes, well, actually, no, not quite. They want you on the show, but they want to create a new character for you.
Damn.
Based around your audition and your personality. Yeah. So they literally built JT, for me, basically.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's what really a story. Cool.
And I found out about JT on our very first day when everybody came together in the kind of like boardroom or whatever at the production
for orientation
studio. And everybody had to put their hands up and say, hi, I'm Shane and I'm playing Spinner Mason.
Yeah.
And they got to me and I'm like, hi, I'm Ryan Cooley. And honestly, I have no idea who I'm playing. I don't even know what I'm doing here. And then Linda had revealed at that moment, Linda Schuyler, the executive producer, said, yeah, actually he's going to be playing JT York. And we built this character for him and, you know, good luck, kid.
What an epic story.
That's awesome.
Epic way to join a cast.
It was pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Everybody knows we've got a Discord, DGrads alumni, and we've got a Patreon. And people, when they found out you were joining us, there was a absolute, it was pandemonium. People were freaking out. And I got a deluge of questions and comments. People
they're
are
still coming in right now on Patreon.
They're literally coming in. Like my phone's going bloop, bloop, bloop. You've already answered so many of the fan questions. I'm going to just shout them out as you do. Yep. I'll throw some personal questions in there, but I make up fan names so that nobody knows they're my own questions.
That's right.
Internet Girl 12 is actually Mike LaBelle.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Season 2, episode 15, Hot for Teacher. Canadian air date, January 10th, 2003. U.S. air date, July 25th, 2003. The writers were Yana Senor, Claire Ross Dunn with the story, and Sean Yara with the teleplay, and directed by none other than Phil Earnshaw. Damn.
There was some good directing in this episode, too.
There really was.
He directed like 9 million episodes of Degrassi.
Yeah. He did, of the original and ours. I didn't know he was even directing the original Degrassi. But that's one of the reasons why Linda thought of him to bring him back for the early episodes. Okay, so we open on Miss Hatzilakos's class, and it's physics, where they're going to be looking at the laws of attraction and repulsion. Metaphor? I think so. Miss H talks to the class as JT checks her out. Everything seems in order here. Then, trying to get Arise out of the class, he uses a popsicle stick mastodon skeleton to perform a reenactment of their presumed mating rituals. But Miss H puts a stop to this and punishes JT with guinea pig duty for a week before and after school with, and only with, Miss H herself. On JT, realizing that this is anything but a punishment, and we roll credits.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I'm going to be calling her Hot Salacos accidentally, probably, just full disclaimer.
Miss Hot Sauce. My character
never said her name any other way, so sorry. Forgive me.
Melissa DeMarco was the object of everyone's desire on set. She is, such a beautiful person inside and out.
Melissa DeMarco was amazing. We hit it off right away, her and I. We really enjoyed spending time on this episode. I can remember it pretty fondly. You know, I was also pretty nervous, right? Because, you know. I'm still a 12-year-old and 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, you're crushing on this. It's kind of an awkward situation, like workplace situation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's this like, I don't know, like the basic instinct type shot where they're like,
it's coming up right now. Yeah. JT gets to school bright and early. He then tries to act sexy as he stands in the doorway of Miss H's class while we see her legs. And they're revealed in like a femme fatale film noir style. And then as Miss H starts explaining how the guinea pigs are to be cared for, he tries the old, oops, you dropped your pen, to get her to bend over. But no dice.
He has no follow through. I'm so curious, Ryan, what was your thought process there? Because did you just lose heart in the middle of it?
I think it just, retreated.
I think she just shut it down so matter-of-factly, where it's like, oh, I think you dropped something. No, must be yours. Oh, all right. Yeah.
Yep, that's fine. I'll pick that up.
Well, what are you going to say? No, I think it's yours. No, it's not. Yeah. No, move on, kid.
Yeah.
He has no idea what he's doing, honestly.
No, he doesn't.
I think but he saw it in, like, it's just a pop culture reference, right? It's a cliche that he's reenacting.
Or somebody, you know, some unseen, you know, scene that we didn't see. Somebody's like, well, drop something on the floor, man. And he's kind of going like, oh, okay. But maybe doesn't fully understand what that means. But so he just kind of drops it and is expecting, you know, doesn't know what's going to happen, but something.
Yeah. He knows step one. He doesn't know step two.
Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. All right. So then he's introduced to the guinea pigs properly and spotlight on Isabella, who takes a real liking to him, which leads to a cute and for the first time wholesome moment between him and Miss H.
That first interested, loving look at the guinea pigs.
She's so cute.
Do you have any stories about the guinea pig wrangler that was on set?
I don't remember the wrangler.
No.
But I remember the smell. But I also remember they had puppets too, because, you know,
I knew there were some puppets in there. Yeah,
there was puppets. There's a hero piggy, I think that piggy probably got paid scale, maybe scale and a half that day. You know, I can't remember.
Good contract.
Now we're in Simpson's class. Sean and Toby want details of JT's one-on-one time with Miss H. JT tells them about the pen drop, making it seem like it worked exactly as planned. This time, though, it does work, but it's Simpson that picks it up and lightly reprimands JT for talking JT quietly continues with his fictional retelling of events, which draws the envy of Sean and Toby. Man, our lucky JT friend.
Quick shout out to Marshall McLuhan. The message. We got to get our CanCon in there.
Also, just the constant reinforcement of the computer labs, you know, and like, you know, you're looking at this stuff from 2001, 2002. It's like, wow, flat screen computers in a high school? No way. What? Every reference to the websites, too. Like, it's like, if I just go online and search this thing, it's like.
Yeah. Guineapigs.com.
Yeah. Guineapigs.com.
And it was just a wholesome site about guinea pigs with, you know, like what habitat they live in and what they eat. And like JT being like, I did research on the computer.
On the internet.
On the internet. Yeah. Back then you needed to differentiate. Was it a book or was it something else?
So now we're in Armstrong's class. And Coach helps Spinner with his geometry assignment, which gets Spin's armpit quite close to Coach's face, and it's apparent Spinner is not using deodorant or not showering as frequently as a pubescent boy should.
It was a great shot through your armpit.
It was. Huh? He walks through the class, drawing similar reactions from everybody else, and as Spin stands there, Ellie walks up and tells him, in not so many words, he needs to shower.
You know, this is an important B plot. You know, this is, you know, you had to tell this story, Shane. You had to.
I know. And I remember Phil was very gung-ho. It was kind of his hat tip to Spike Lee in that shot where I was actually standing on the dolly as it was rolling back and everyone got that view of my armpit.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were some cool stylized camera moves on this.
Do you remember the name of the guy that pushed the dolly on set? And it like in those early years.
Was it
years?
Jay?
I think it was Jay.
Backwards baseball cap, kind of goes.
Yeah. It was Jay.
We loved Jay. Jay was. I remember Jay being a favorite. I remember one episode where they were pushing the dolly all the way down the hallway. It was me and Goldsby and maybe Miriam. And there was a moment where we had to actually pass and the camera had to go over top of the dolly, but they couldn't actually achieve that with the guy kind of standing there pushing it. So what he literally did was he pushed it, let go of it.
Oh.
And then they dressed him up as a teacher and he went like this, stood there like this as the camera passed by him
and then caught the
dolly again and then kept on going. And that was Jay. That made me think of that, Shane, so when cool. You talked about that shot, but fun little shots like that. Those were good days on set. Anyway, shout out to Jay, the dolly guy. Nice.
That's incredible. Some of those, behind the scenes looks at how some of those really complex camera movements are done in features of like, you know, redressing a room as the camera's spinning around and subbing actors in and taking them back out and mirrors that then are taken out and someone else is standing behind it. It's incredible what these people can do.
Filmmaking magic.
So now we're outside of Coach's class and Spin is paranoid that he stinks, as he should be, and looks to Jimmy for counsel. Tells Jimmy that they have to be honest with each other. They have to tell each other the truth, no matter how uncomfortable that is. And Spinner wants them to make a pact. Jimmy isn't taking it anywhere near as serious as Spin wants him to, and he walks off, leaving Spin to desperately rinse his pits in the nearby water fountain with some girls, taking notice of that.
Yeah. I very rarely got to do scenes with you, Shane, and with Aubrey.
Yeah.
And Shane, you know, fabulous performance as always.
Yeah, right. Agreed. Seconded.
I think that Aubrey, you know, was really like the character and what he brought to that character, even very, very early on, you could tell there was something very special there. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Shane, for you, I guess that it must have been pretty cool, you know, getting to work with him, you know, every single day, almost every scene. Very natural. Like you can tell, like we're all kind of younger and kind of like a little stilted with our lines and maybe a little over, a little under, whatever, but he was very natural right from the get-go. Mm.
He was full of personality, very funny, very bright. And it just came through with the character, and he could switch very quickly from being the guy joking around with all these subtle little movements and bringing a lot of life to that frame to snapping right into a very serious intellectual debate with somebody. But hanging out behind the scenes as a group, Aubrey, myself, Lauren Collins, Stacey Farber, Adamo.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, the hell that we plagued the crew with. We're just, they're desperately trying to communicate with each other and make their day. And we're just a bunch of like privileged kids joking around. Like, we could be in school right now, but look at this. This is great.
God help
the tutor.
Can't
believe they're paying us for this.
Our tutors. Remember the tutors on set? Like, yeah. God help those poor people. Oh, my goodness. I know.
So patient.
Now, in Coach Armstrong's grade 8 math class, Toby, Emma, and Manny give reasons to JT of why never in a million years will he ever get to hook up with Miss H, which leaves JT looking a little disappointed. I mean, in this moment, I actually forgot where this episode went, but I was wondering if he actually has legitimate feelings for her and it's not just a bit of a lusty obsession.
I think that it is meant to kind of start that way, but also meant to be a way to impress his friends and impress Toby and Sean and be the cool guy and the class clown and just kind of continue to, you know, build up this persona, because there's a fear of rejection or whatever. I mean, everybody can relate to that. Slowly it starts to chip away, and you can see that as the scenes kind of continue, that it's less about, you know, this pipe dream of possibly having a relationship with Mrs. H, and more about having an actual passion about something outside of just making people laugh. Mm-hmm. And it falls to her to kind of work that out of him. Mm-hmm. by giving him a little bit of a hard lesson, which is coming up here very shortly. Mm-hmm. Where she treats him like an adult and says, "No, man, you insult me, and this is how adults deal with this thing." Yeah. So do you want to engage me in a real way and actually, focus on what is a burgeoning interest, or do you want to just keep being a clown? It's up to you.
I've got a question here, actually, from Jeff on Patreon, and this might be a little embarrassing, but Ryan, did you ever have a crush on a teacher in real life? And if so, did you apply any of that experience to your acting in this episode?
Not to this degree. I would not say no. I did not apply this type of pressure. I think that there was a teacher at some point, and they may not have been my teacher, but there was a science teacher in my high school that was very much a Hatzilakos type character that everybody was like, "Oh, you got that teacher. That's the science teacher that you want." So I can certainly relate to it. But never quite to the extent of dropping a pencil on the floor and actually thinking something is going to happen. As a young person, I always felt very comfortable around adults. And maybe even more comfortable around adults than other kids my own age. It felt to me like I was very close with the writers. I would go to their writing room at lunch often and hang out with them and talk to them. I was very comfortable around them, maybe even sometimes even a little more comfortable than my castmates. And maybe they could kind of sense that in me a little bit, and putting me in a room in scenes with an adult, the teacher in this case, Miss H, and having me be the character to go on to this, into the storyline, was maybe a reflection of that. But I can remember as an actor in that moment being like feeling very comfortable because like I get to work with an adult in this scene one-on-one. Later on in the episodes, and we could talk about that more as we get into those scenes, but those were important scenes to me as a performer, because I felt like I was in a comfortable space with this other serious older professional who knew her stuff and came prepared and like expected me to come just as prepared, versus if I was doing a scene with Jake or Miriam or whatever, and not to say that they weren't prepared and weren't professional. Of course they were. But it was a little different when you're both, you know, kids and you kind of like can, you know, joke around with one another and whatever, but it wasn't quite like that in this case. So I can remember feeling that as a kid, and I think that that's reflected a little bit in this episode as we get into these later scenes.
After everything was said and done on Degrassi, and maybe even in the later years, where I think everyone had like a little, you know, identity crisis of becoming so famous as a child actor, and then suddenly every new person you meet, all they want to know about is the show. And then you're kind of like, oh, if I remove this from me, from myself, would anyone care about anything that I had to say? Am I just entirely ordinary except for this one exceptional thing? That's just a job. It's not even, you know, really me. We do interviews with adults. We have a production crew, and I hang out like as a 15-year-old, 17-year-old. I'm hanging out with 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds, and they're joking around with me, and they care what I have to say. They're joking. They're laughing at my jokes, and I'm just wondering, like, is it part of their job description that they have to pretend like they care?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think to certain extent, yeah.
After I stopped acting, I went on the other side of camera. I started editing. Oh, I started directing. You realize pretty quickly, like, they don't have any patience the way they do for actors. They don't gas you up. They don't treat you with those special gloves like they do actors. And it was a long adjustment period where I was like, that's kind of mean, or like, that's why, be nicer to me. You know, like, I had to realize the actors are all protected. You know, they're bubble wrapped on set.
No, Mike, we're not going to make you a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich whenever you want at 4 o'clock. Okay.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're not going to whip that together for you and make sure that your dressing room is just exactly the way that you
totally
want.
We need the cut tomorrow. Yeah. Like, like, where is it? I get it. It's like the whole thing. It's to protect the performance. Actors they've got a delicate job. They're exposing themselves. They've got egos, and you know, you don't want to be the person on set responsible for deflating an actor before they've got to go do this scene, you know?
And so you were exposing yourself, Mike, as an actor?
I was exposing myself constantly as an actor.
Yeah, that's
constantly. Yeah. I thought I was special.
Nobody. Everybody's seen that.
And I guess the child actors are protected all that much more, because it's like, they need to feel comfortable on set. They need to feel like they're on an equal playing field with
a bunch of adults. Obviously the crew and whoever was involved in making Degrassi, were very, 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 very good at that. At least in my experience, the set was always a place of absolute, it was an amazing place to be. It was a pleasure to be there. And that, I'm sure, has so much to do with how the crew made it comfortable for a bunch of crazy 13-year-olds running around. Just like, you know, talk about Linda for a second. You know, there was a huge amount of respect that she had for her, you know, for her kids, as she used to say. But, you know, she also had the authority of the teacher, right? Like, we all knew, you know, when you heard the high heels coming down the hall, it was like, everybody just needs to just make
Linda's
sure
coming
that,
to set.
We have to just, everybody's got to be on their best behavior. But there was a lot that, because of tremendous respect, that was mutual. But, you know, she expected people to be, even young actors, to be professionals, and she supported us as professionals. Okay.
I remember the shock that I had when I first realized that everyone in the production office had their own audio and video feed.
Oh my gosh.
As well. Even if you don't hear the heels, they're always watching. Okay. All right.
I for sure didn't know that basically the entire time I was there.
Oh, jeez.
This is almost certainly why they killed me off.
No. Okay. Actually, now that you bring that up, did they kill you off or did you request to be done with it?
Here it is, folks.
This is the main event, right? This is it. There's two main events. We'll get to the second one in a minute.
Because I honestly don't know. What I heard was, like, you had been in the industry from the time that you were much younger, and it had ran its course, and you decided that it was time for you to part amicably.
Sort of.
Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Here's the actual straight. Here's the straight goods. This is the scoop.
The scoop. See,
when we were going into season six, which was the last season that I was on, they reached out before the season started shooting and said, we'd like to have a meeting with you about this upcoming season, which I wasn't expecting that. And I hadn't indicated to them that I was looking to make a move or looking to go anywhere. This actually goes back to the respect and then to the integrity that we were talking about a second ago. I sat down in Linda's office with her and I suppose maybe a couple of producers. You know, she said, we want to tell this story. We want to have it be about a random act of violence. And we're thinking that maybe we want you to tell that story and to be the victim of this random act. What do you think about that? And gave me an opportunity to react. And it was also matched with the reassurance that if this is not something that I wanted to participate in, that they would find a way to not do it and to work around it, but that they really wanted to tell this story. And so that was it. It was take that away and think about that, Ryan, as opposed to them surprising me or them saying this is happening no matter what, too bad, so sad. So I did that and I took it back and I looked at my own situation and I spoke a lot with my parents and in particular my dad, who Charlie Cooley, shout out, was my manager and at the time. And I had a deep passion for continuing to learn and wanted to go to school. I ended up going to the University of Toronto, shout out Vic College. And that was the right timing. It was like, if you want to do this, you can go to college. And at the other hand, you can tell what is going to be an extremely important story in the Degrassi universe. And I also went back to this moment where I was like, well, this is it. I mean, I can really make a mark on this show. I can really have an important episode. I can have my dramatic moment as an actor or whatever, but it can be a satisfying thing that you can do. And so I went back and I said, yes, I'm in. I want to do this. And we had agreed at that time to a couple of very important things. One was it had to stay secret. It had to be truly random in order to tell the story properly. And their intent was not to promote it leading up to it at all, which was, I think, fairly brave and fairly unique for a TV show. If you want viewers, you kind of give them a little hit of what's about to happen. We swore each other to secrecy and we went our way through the entire season. It happened mid-season. I didn't say anything. And then, you know, the actors found out at the read-through, at the read-through.
I was one of them.
And there's footage of people reacting, you know, in real time to that story. And then, then we shot it and then it happened, you know, and it went out into the world and people were totally, totally shocked. And that's exactly how it happened.
I have tremendous respect for you. Like,
yeah,
thinking about it in this, with this new information, you did kind of sacrifice your character for a greater good.
I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud of the episode. And I still, you know, get many letters and notes from people. In fact, I had a letter just last week, you know, that came in that I responded to of somebody saying, you know, this had a huge impact on my life and thank you so much. So it's something I'm really proud of. I also got to go off and do my school and started the second part of my life, which I'm also extremely grateful for. In the career that I've built outside of acting. And so I literally would not have been able to do that if it were not for this moment. So it was one of those, like crossroad moments in your life.
Yeah.
And looking back on it in hindsight, I don't think it could have been a better decision or a bigger impact, on the show. So
that's great. I think,
but at the end of the day, they killed me off. So, you know,
right. Okay. Like, screw them. Screw those
No, in the dirtiest way possible, too. You know, like stabbed in the back, like give me a break.
No coming back for you. I don't know why the story was shared around, and that's the version that I got. And I think many of the cast had no idea that that it wasn't at your prerogative, that you weren't the one that requested to be done with it. Thank you for.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad that I finally have the scoop. Now we're in Kwan's class. Ashley presents her work to everybody. It's a grim and despairing story that she tells. And Spin and Jimmy joke about the tone by mimicking the slitting of their wrists. But when Kwan asks Jimmy for...
Which was heavy, right, guys? Like,
yeah.
That was
right?
a pretty... Yeah. Like, I'm watching the episode. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Network the TV... Show- You know,
you couldn't do that right now. I mean, a flip mention of suicide like that, it felt very glib.
Yeah, it did.
When Kwan sees the two talking, she asks Jimmy for his thoughts. He clams up, getting Spin to remind him of their truth pact. So reluctantly, Jimmy tells Ashley and the class what he really thought of her story, offending her immediately and leaving Jimmy quite uncomfortable with what he just had to say. As JT struts through the halls, Miss H pops out and tells JT she has something to show him, prompting some props from Sean as he follows her into the class. And what is that something? Isabella, the guinea pig that took a liking to JT, is pregnant.
Is JT the father?
Whoa.
Who's the father?
And Miss Hatzilakos attributes the finding to JT. JT says he'll inquire about special diets for pregnant guinea pigs.
On the internet.
Yes, on the interwebs. He's actually forming a real bond with this teacher. Right from the beginning, like, you know, he's up to his old tricks. He's trying to charm her. He's trying to joke around with her. And it's all just falling by the wayside. She's not taking any of that bait, which is forcing JT to, like, it's stripping him down.
Yeah,
to feel where real he feelings. Can only be himself. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah. Emma finds JT in the media immersion lab at lunch, struggling to find anything online about guinea pigs. But there's a good reason for that. She helps him with his spelling of guinea and walks off. Success, JT finds the information that he was looking for.
Hacked.
Yes, hacked.
He hacked right. it with the correct spelling of guinea pig.
Yeah. It's not G-I-N-I, G-I-N-Y, kids. Yeah. We're back with Mrs. H's class, and she assigns work on static charges to everybody, and then quickly gets called out to the hall for a little powwow with Coach A. JT is concentrating hard on getting this assignment right and doing the work, but between Sean's jokes about Coach A now being JT's competition for Miss H's heart, and Toby calling JT the new teacher's pet, JT remembers that he is, in fact, JT. He puts two balloons under his shirt, symbolizing Miss H's bosom, and starts imitating her,
well done.
Teasing Sean and shoving Toby's face in his balloon boobies, only to get caught by Miss H red-handed. She's livid and hurt, and JT is instantly and deeply remorseful.
My question was, like, does she realize that she's being mocked and objectified?
Oh,
is that what
have.
Like yeah. is he JT's not explicitly, when she comes back into the room, JT's not explicitly saying things like that she had said before.
I think that he's, like, you know, using her voice and, like, maybe even saying, like, that's I don't know.
And so I just missed that.
I think the boobs are the dead giveaway, right?
Yeah.
Right. They would be, but, like, that's a little reductive. I don't think I would pick up on it because I wouldn't, you know, if I had breasts,
I wouldn't
necessarily pick up on that.
I think with the male students, she is reduced to that, right?
Right.
So
this is like something she's
woman.
Probably used to, right? She gets,
of course.
She, yeah. She, okay. Got it.
Yeah,
and this
I
is the
so.
Last straw.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm learning here, folks.
Which I think becomes more and more clear when in one of the scenes to come where JT takes that moment. I think out of genuine interest, I don't think JT was actually hitting on Miss Hatzilakos, but when he's like, were you always a science teacher? You were never a model? And I'm sure she's been dealing with that her entire life.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
She knows how she looks.
100%. Me and Goldsby.
Goldsby was having way too much fun in there.
you could see it on his face. He's trying to play it straight, like, because the character is very dry, but you can see there's just little bits of something on his face.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are outtakes. There have to be.
Just like any of the pushing and shoving scenes, for the most part, whenever Jimmy and Sean get into it, there's always a smile on Aubrey's face, even in this episode.
He can't help it.
In earlier on, when Spinner was first asking Jimmy to be honest if he stinks, and he's like, always tell me the truth. And then Jimmy's like, you can't handle the truth. There was already a big smile on my face before he grabbed it.
I saw that.
Like, what?
He's corpsing.
Yeah, for sure. I wish we could see more outtakes.
Jimmy and Spinner walk to school, and Jimmy complains to Spinner that forcing him to tell Ashley the truth about her story just might have ruined his chance of getting back together with her, which I didn't know that was still on the agenda. It seems to be talked about and then forgotten about, and not too much movement there. But anyway, apparently it's still on Jimmy's mind. The two debate if honesty is always the right course of action. Spinner is standing firm that it is. And just then, to solidify his point, Ashley walks up and thanks Jimmy for his critique of her story. She made the necessary changes, and now the entire thing is much stronger. Jimmy himself now commits to an all honesty, all the time approach. And then, in the spirit of all of this, Spinner tells Jimmy, honestly, his idea to get back with Ashley is terrible, as he becomes a feeble version of himself when he's with her. This doesn't sit too well with Jimmy, though.
He's going to take his revenge honesty to her.
Now we're in the Zen garden, and JT finds Miss H keeping to herself, listening to some music and reading a magazine. And JT seizes this opportunity to apologize to her. She accepts, but JT senses that there's something deeper that's bothering her. She's angry that he's cutting himself down at the knees by always focusing on being class clown when he's clearly intelligent and should be applying himself more. But JT's answer to this, as he didn't really seem ready for something so real and stripped down, he'll save her the disappointment of watching this and just transfer out of her class. But Miss H, once again, doesn't take the bait and tells him he should do whatever he needs to do.
Ooh, you don't care? I don't care even more, kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's great.
She is great. I mean, this is obviously, she's teaching this kid a very, very important little lesson here. You know, you're in high school now, and you know, you can choose one path or you can choose another. Doesn't matter to me, but, you know, let me know what you think. Like, that's good teaching. That's good, you know, parenting. That's good. That's a good teacher right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's the teacher that JT didn't know he needed. I mean,
good way
she's
of putting
just
it.
The right one to appear for his type of personality.
And believes in him and has faith in him and you know, I think ultimately will help him no matter what.
In the media lab again, Terry watches as Jimmy types out a Spinner truth list. And even she seems to be made a little uneasy by what's on it.
It's a long list, man.
Yeah. She makes this comment to Jimmy, who swiftly shoos her away under threat of him typing up his own list for her.
Shout out to Chrissy Schmidt, who, I don't know, fun little, random little behind the scenes fact, but Chrissy and I, we actually ended up renting a house in Toronto together.
What?
For years, and actually a few different houses, including in this season and other seasons. Chrissy and I were very, very close.
That's cool. Amazing.
During the filming.
Because she lived out of town and I lived out of town. And so when we were filming every day, we needed a place in Toronto. So we rented a place in Toronto together.
Terry is like a true blue ride or die.
Ride or die.
Even though she left Ashley alone for a few episodes and sided with Paige and Hazel, that's what a best
There's
friend does.
There's bumps in these relationships, you know?
Yeah,
bumps,
I agree. You know? I agree.
They got to be tested.
All the stuff Ashley put her through in season one, it still outweighs that.
All right. Now we're with JT again as he walks to Miss H's class, but the door is locked. He was there to do his after school guinea pig cage cleaning. He peers through the window and is panicked by something. Isabella is on the floor. JT runs off.
Insert puppet.
Just for Isla. JT runs off to find Miss H and gets to her just as she's leaving out the front door for the day. They both turn and run back to the classroom. When they get there, after spotting her through the glass once more, they end up trying to catch her, but it's a futile effort, and they end up chasing her all throughout the class until she tucks under a workstation out of reach. Miss H tells him that the janitor plants rat poison all around the school.
Ruh-roh.
So JT lays down and desperately reaches into the abyss for Isabella.
She can move pretty quick, that Isabella.
They run.
And she's pregnant.
They scurry.
Yeah.
All right. After school, Jimmy berates Spinner with his truth list, and Spinner is not enjoying himself. He tries to get away, but Jimmy keeps going, and the two of them then start trading truth bombs back and forth until Spinner jumps on a bus and rides off into the sunset, leaving Jimmy yelling at whoever is caught watching him.
Did they seriously rent a TTC bus to set?
I literally wrote down the same question. I'm like, TTC bus? Question mark?
Way too expensive to justify for the gag.
Listen, if I'm in these scenes, you know, they're blowing the big time budget, okay? You know, why do you think they kept me to beelines all the time? You know?
Yeah.
Now we're in Miss H's class after hours. JT and Miss H lie on the floor, beckoning Isabella out from her makeshift burrow. JT states that he isn't leaving until he gets her out. As the hours tick by, JT looks for ways to draw Isabella out and remembered also from his research that guinea pigs like low lighting and soft music, don't we all? So
love it.
He sets the stage. And as they're waiting, JT has another moment to get to know Miss H and asks if she was always a science teacher and never a model. But she doesn't seem to like this.
So inappropriate.
And in a way seems to be
so
waiting
sleazy.
For this. So
I mean, it's not actually in the scene, but man, like,
No.
Come on, man, take a hint.
The fun thing, though, for watching you and your performance, and I think you really nailed it, every time JT tries one of his, oh, I know what I need to do right now, kind of like machismo LARPs, I guess, you can see he immediately fails and he goes, oh, I shouldn't have said that. You can read it on your face that, you know, he's instantly embarrassed.
Machismo LARP or whatever term that, yeah, that was my specialty, I suppose.
Well, we're discovering like who JT thinks he is versus mm-hmm. who he actually is. Like he's confronting his behavior in the moment.
JT was a pretty smart kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like you talk about like being able to pull up cultural references or always have the answer or always have the response. Like, you know, it takes some, you know, intellectual capability to be there.
Maybe I'm alone here, but I think had JT asked Ms. Hatzilakos this question earlier on in the episode versus how he asked her now, it seemed more genuine. Like he really wanted to know if she had been a model because she's beautiful. But I don't think it would have come from the same place as him, like just trying to, you know, weasel his way in there and like, mm-hmm. he had to
I think
be a model,
it, I
right?
think it's genuine. I think it's not meant to be, you know, mm-hmm. hurtful necessarily. Mm-hmm. And they will continue to have a very good relationship, I think, as the seasons go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. She explains that teaching is and always has been her life. Mm-hmm. And now is completely honest that is really what hurt her the most about JT's joke in class. He apologizes again, genuinely, really understanding her in this moment. It appears to be water under the bridge, just as cute little Isabella emerges from her hiding place.
It all works out.
It all works out.
So beautiful.
It's a new day. Jimmy walks into Quan's class to sit next to Spin, who immediately asks if Jimmy has prepared more truth ammunition for today. But Jimmy seems to be tired of the fight, and Spin is too. They agree that honesty is not always the best policy. And timing couldn't be better, as Quan enters the class chewing on a blue pen and has ink all over her lips and teeth.
So much ink.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, as if she wouldn't know that this is literally dripping with ink.
How'd she make it to class?
You can see Lin-Lin, like, just, like, really leaning into it as well with her line, you know, her line back, like, just kind of overdoing it with her lips.
Yeah. I can just see Phil going, like, Let's go crazy with this. Lin-Lin, just dip your face in this thing. So in the new spirit of not telling the truth, everybody has a good chuckle over this, and Spinner and Jimmy seem to be touching their faces, trying to indicate that something might be amiss. But the only thing anyone actually tells her is she, in fact, looks lovely today. The gang is in Miss H's class. And Sean and Toby flank JT as soon as he's alone, looking for details on his romantic time after school with Miss Hatzilakos the night before. JT baits them with details of a passionate moment that they shared, much like earlier on in the episode, only to disappoint them with the payoff. And that payoff was witnessing Isabella give birth. Toby and Sean walk off dissatisfied, but JT has turned a new leaf and has a newfound respect for himself and for Ms. Hatzilakos. And as he looks over Isabella and her newborn babies, we freeze.
Freeze.
So wholesome. This whole episode felt a lot more grounded and true to a real high school day, kind of day in the life.
You know, every episode of Degrassi didn't need to be, you know, an overdose here and a, you know, something else there and a death in the family here. It's just like, it can just, you know, it can just be a regular day in high school or a regular couple of days in high school too. And there's some movement. And I think that movement, at least for my character, was pretty important. Now he gets into his old classic hijinks and, you know, literally the next episode, but, that's okay.
Yeah. At least you know that it's in there.
There's something there.
We're almost at the end of season two now.
Yeah, man.
And there are a couple central characters that are still one dimensional, two dimensional, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
Are almost just caricatures of themselves right now because we've never gone deeper. And I think Manny was one, but she got hers. And JT was the other one of the core four from the beginning. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's crazy that version one of this script actually did have JT and Hatzilakos ultimately ending up together. But they didn't go with that one.
They got married.
Yeah. So, but ultimately they thought, this might be a little weird. So they didn't go with that one, but
fair enough.
This one was a good, it was fine too.
Just reminds me of this, Zach Galifianakis bit where he was like, did you hear about the new high school student that, you know, got caught in that relationship with his 25-year-old teacher? It's a really sad story. He got high-fived to death by his friends.
It is interesting.
I'll tell you what, it could have been a very dark, intense episode of Degrassi, but they decided to keep it light with the guinea pig pregnancy.
They pulled back. They got scared at the last
second. They had V1, and they thought, no, we just can't. Every episode can't be like this, you know?
They're riding the throttle.
And there was there was a good message in this one. It really was. It was fun in the B plot. The A plot was fun and also wholesome. But it was a breather from, you know, what Degrassi is famous for.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, but, you know, that, that breather doesn't last long, I'm sure, you know.
No,
something crazy is going to happen next episode.
Sure. It's all gonorrhea in the next episode.
I don't have gonorrhea in real life. Please stop emailing me. We were inundated, Ryan, with questions, with feedback.
Did we get to some? Should we do a few more, or what do you want to do here?
As you know, you can email your questions, your comments to dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. Or join our Discord group. It's very active right now. If you want to see video versions of all the podcasts and see our faces while we do this, you can join us on Patreon. We also do some bonus content there. But we've got
some
more questions.
Please don't comment on my hairline, folks. I'm doing my best. You know, it's been a long time, okay? Shane? I don't have a hat on like Shane, okay?
Shane's got a plug for you.
Nice.
Now hair time.
I'm you if not for one decision. Yeah.
All right.
And you look great. Now hair time.
Okay, so this is from Taylor on Discord. Taylor says, Ryan, as the funny class clown character, you had a lot of comedic lines. I would even say that you had some iconic lines now that probably keep coming up for you. If you could change one line or quote that you had to say that still haunts you, what would it be?
A lot of times the writers would put stuff in that genuinely I didn't think was very funny. And, you know, you get through a bit of it in read-throughs and stuff. But, like, ultimately, if they keep it in there, you got to deliver it as best as you possibly can. So, whatever. But there was one episode where Sarah and I, Liberty, were in a scene, and the writer said, I don't know what happened to them that day, but they were just like, you know what? We're just going to put in a bunch of weird Star Trek references for JT and Liberty to say. And so we literally had this scene where I had to say, you know, make it so, from Picard, and try to somehow work that into like into these lines. You know, she'd say something, I had to be like, make it so. It's like, and they're like, can you please not say it like Jean-Luc Picard? I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that because a teenager would never say make it so or engage. And they had to say engage.
Isn't that what they were going for? If they were Star Trek references, wouldn't they have wanted it to be said like Picard?
The scene was not, had nothing to do with Star. It was just like a scene between us, but they were just inserting the Star Trek references and we had to make it sound natural. So make it so and engage, you know, and everybody's snickering in the background, like laughing their asses off. Because I sound like Jean-Luc Picard. I can remember that pretty clearly.
There's some tough peanut butter lines on the show. I do remember.
Oh, my God, yes. This was my last line ever. It was my last line. It was something about eating a Liberty sandwich or you know, Liberty sandwich with peanut butter or something. That was like the last thing I ever said on Degrassi, and people always quoted in, you know, on Instagram and stuff.
And I do find that is the way, like, that the lines that I had the most trouble with, the ones that I thought, I don't want to say that. No one on earth would say this line. It feels alien. Those are the lines that keep coming back. Say this line. Oh, I love when you said it that time. It was so.
A bowl of Liberty oatmeal, I believe, is what it was. And I remember on set being like, what the hell does that even mean?
Spinner and Jimmy. Spinner says, listen, man, I would want the whole truth enchilada. Like, what is the?
I love that.
It means nothing.
I love
that. It means nothing. All right, whatever.
And I think you played it well. Like, you just got to throw it away.
Sure.
Sometimes, yeah.
If you don't know what to do with it, just throw it away.
Cassie's great at that.
She's really
Cassie's
good.
Also
really
good
at
gosh darn mascot thing. That they put me in that. No. That was not a storyline I was thrilled about. I'm like, I'm cool with the guinea pigs. You know, I OD on I don't know what my character
Oxycodone.
But like, get me out of this stupid panther outfit, please. I'm begging you.
I don't remember an OD on Oxy at all.
Yeah,
really?
Dude,
it was huge.
What?
Was
huge. I was ODing on Oxy. I had a, you know, Liberty and JT get pregnant, and you guys picked
that.
The
dude,
one
speaking
about
of,
you guys picked the one about
in the oven.
Guinea pigs. Give me a break.
Well,
come on.
Well, come back.
No,
you got
to come
back. Would you do this again?
I'll do it again, but you know, it's like five or six seasons in, so you guys got to go fast.
Yeah, we'll all try.
Right. All right,
that was another. That was another line. That's exactly one of those lines from that episode with your or that two-parter where you OD on oxycodone. That bun in the oven.
Oh yes,
I can't say it. To this day, I can't say that. It makes no sense to my brain. I think I'm still trying to nail that line.
But
I'm like,
dude, well, you have
years
to do it just
later.
Like that. Just like, and they love in it. The oven.
Uh-oh. Do you want to talk about the Drake music video? No, we've all talked about
it. Oh, yeah.
That.
You don't need to.
No, we're going to end it with that. That's what we're going to
do. Oh, you do want to talk about it. Okay.
Of course I do.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
This is the moment because like this is everybody's like, you know.
Clear the air.
So here's the clear, honest to God truth of what happened.
Okay.
I get an email from the production, which I'm sure you guys got.
Well, no, I did because I was also excluded.
Too bad for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get the email, right? A production company, yeah, this and that. I'm like, okay, great. So we're going back and forth. We're talking about whatever, the details, when to show up, how to do it, what to wear, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Personal message from Aubrey. Excellent. And then the weekend that it was scheduled, my best friend – had twin babies.
Oh, wow. Damn.
And so when I had to choose between going to doing this and being with my best friend on the right after the twins were born,
yeah, mm-hmm.
I reluctantly had to say no to the Drake episode and had to go, and mm-hmm. be with my best friend.
Game time decision. That's I think you made the right choice.
That it's not exciting. It's not spicy. Yeah. I knew that it was not a scam. That's the number one thing that people like to
what?
Send me. It
That's
was not
crazy.
A scam.
So that
you're
is...
like quoted saying that.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, you just thought he thought it was a joke.
And I wrote back to them. I said, look, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be able to participate. But all my best. Now, do I wish that I was there? Hell yeah, I wish I was there. Are you kidding me? It would have been incredible. Yeah. But duty calls, man. You know, there's these certain moments in life and you don't get them back. And so I was just like, I'm going to go do this thing instead. So that's what I did.
You made that for you?
Incredible right video. Call. Looked like a lot of fun. Shane, I know you're
a big
part of
that.
No, it was
a terrible time. No, you didn't miss much. Neither of you.
I had better things to do.
I didn't address it then because of just kind of, it felt really private. But however many years on, I feel totally fine saying that was what was going on. But for I didn't want to tweet out or post out or answer, people be like, well, this is happening with people don't care. They're like, I don't care. Your best friend, like, what? Who cares?
Yeah.
It was more exciting just to kind of stay quiet and let it percolate.
Let it happen.
Yeah.
You know what's sure. really crazy? We just passed our 8-year anniversary of that video. If anyone wasn't
there, you go.
Old enough. My God.
That
2018,
is crazy.
June 2018, over my birthday weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end it with that then. You
know, yeah, that's
the
great.
Big,
that's
the
a
big
great
reveal.
Place.
Hope that's,
Thank
you
know,
that. Hope people are satisfied with that answer.
That is so clarifying. And it was completely the opposite of what I had been told. So,
but I bet a bunch of people are going to listen to this and go like, nah, he's being nice. No, something definitely happened. And then
something
and
definitely
go
went down. He's definitely got beef with Drake. Yeah. Him and Aubrey are like, they don't get along.
No. Ryan, like, I honestly feel like I want to keep talking for hours and hours.
Really do,
there's so much I want to catch up on your life and like what you're doing. And maybe we'll have to have you on just for a catch up and a conversation, not a recap type episode. Or maybe we just all need to go and have a little barbecue in a park somewhere.
I think that we should do both of those things.
Yeah.
Honestly, Ryan, it was great seeing you. I hope your family's doing well. I miss your parents. I miss you. You talked about your dad before, and you know, drummer to drummer earlier on, he was the coolest guy I could hang out with. On
Shout that, out so. Charlie Cooley, the best drummer I think in the world.
Hell awesome. Yeah. Once again, subscribe to our Patreon if you want to see the video version of any of these early releases, commercial free, and some bonus content. Big thanks from all the audience and us personally again, Ryan, for coming on and gracing us with your presence. Until next time, this has been another DGrads podcast with Shane Kipple, Mike LoBell, and special guest Ryan Cooley. And we will see you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Ryan.
Awesome. Thanks,
Cheers.
Everybody.